Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, September 15th. Today, we're visiting with Colorado Sun political reporter Jesse Paul about campaign finance trends, as well as about a lawsuit involving the change in political affiliation for a state senator. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Pinnacle Assurance. Pinnacle Assurance provides workers' comp insurance and was named one of the most community-minded companies in Colorado for the third year in a row. Last year, Pinnacle donated $1.5 million in grants, donations, and scholarships to Colorado communities. Learn how Pinnacle puts care to work at pinnacle.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1879, Colorado's Historical Society held its first official meeting in Denver. It was established by the General Assembly in the spring of 1879 to protect and preserve the nascent state story. Members discussed the military and educational history of their community and heard bombastic remarks by Mayor Richard Sopris about the glory of the state and its capital city over the previous two decades. The Colorado Historical Society and its ever-larger collection occupied space in hotels, office buildings, and the Arapaho County Courthouse until 1895, when it moved to the Capitol's basement. Visitors marveled at exhibits overflowing with taxidermied animals, geological specimens, pottery from ancestral Puebloan sites, and the desiccated remains of those who lived in the ancient cities of southwestern Colorado. The society proved so popular that it soon merited a separate building, a marble museum across 14th Avenue from the state capitol. Its collections grew in size and scope from dioramas of historical scenes made by the Works Progress Administration during the Great Depression to Baby Doe Tabor's wedding dress. The crowded edifice also proved insufficient, and in 1977, the Society moved to the Colorado Heritage Center, a modernistic, sloping structure of brown brick. This structure, and the state's judicial building north of it, came down to make way for the Ralph L. Carr Colorado Judicial Center, and the collection found a new home in 2011. Before we continue, a message from our sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation. And we are speaking today with the Colorado Sun's political reporter and co-founder, Jesse Paul. Hey, Jesse.
Hey.
Thanks for swinging by. I was hoping to talk to you today a little bit about some of the items that you were writing about in Tuesday's unaffiliated newsletter. And one of the things that really caught my eye there is the lack of PAC money that is being contributed in statewide Republican races this year, which is a little different from previous years and really leaves some of the state level contests, you know, heavily weighted financially anyway, toward the Democrats.
Yeah, so I guess some broader context here. I would say so far in the election 2022, with a few exceptions, the kind of storyline that we've seen from races up and down the ballot, both on the state level and the congressional, is just a lack of Republican money coming in a year that Republicans, you know, were feeling really confident about a few months ago. And we see that playing out in state level races in a pretty interesting way. So in Colorado, state level campaign finance limits are really low. And so candidates have to raise a ton more money from a ton more donors in order to get to the kind of numbers that we typically see in a U.S. Senate race or congressional race. But similarly to those, you know, federal races in Colorado, because of campaign finance limits, oftentimes outside groups or super PACs, political action committees, are where the real spending is at. And the thing that we started to see so far this cycle is that not only are Republican candidates raising less money for their individual campaigns, the Democrats, and in some cases, it's really dramatic differences between what the Republicans are raising and how much more the Democrats are raising, but there aren't these super PACs that are coming in like we've seen in previous years to kind of bail them out for the lack of fundraising they've had. And, you know, money isn't everything in politics, but it's a pretty big deal. Because if you don't have money, you can't go on TV, you can't buy radio ads, you can't buy print ads, you can't pay a big staff. So there's a pretty strong correlation between the folks who spend and have the most money and those who don't in terms of who wins an election.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you referenced there being a pretty big difference from previous election cycles. Do you have what that factor of difference is? If it's a 4 or 5 times factor, or do you have a frame of reference for that?
I think that's a pretty fair number to throw out there. In previous years, we've seen groups really get involved early and spend millions of dollars. By comparison, this year, we're seeing $0 in a lot of these races. So I'll just give you an example. One that we looked at was the Secretary of State's contest, where Democrat Jenna Griswold, her campaign has raised more than $3.6 million since she announced her reelection bid. And heading into September, it still had $711,000 in her campaign's bank account, after dropping a lot of money to buy TV ads and kind of get her message out. Her Republican opponent this year is Pam Anderson, a former Jefferson County clerk, and she has raised total just $200,000. So that's less than Jenna Griswold had to start September, and Pam Anderson had just $33,000 in the bank to start the month. So it's a huge discrepancy. It's like a David versus Goliath fight. So to step back and look at the super PAC spending or the super PAC money that's available in these races, it's a similar, very big discrepancy. So there's a group that's called Defend Democracy, which is a state-level super PAC that's backing Griswold. It really hasn't spent much money, and so it had $750,000 in the campaign's account to start September after getting really big donations from donors, Democratic donors that we know well, Merle Chambers, Dean Leffingwell, Terry Huffington. These are kind of, people who are giving hundreds of thousands of dollars, for this effort and other ones. And then the Republican PAC in the Secretary of State's race is this group called Defend Colorado. And it's spent a lot of money so far this cycle, but almost all of it went to the Republican primary, where Pam Anderson beat Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters, that really hotly contested Republican primary back in June. So everyone remembers it. It was a pretty big deal. So Defend Democracy, as I mentioned, had $750,000 to start September. Defend Colorado, the Republican primary PAC, had $25,000 to start the month.
Yeah, huge differences. So are there any races where there's an exception to this current trend? Any statewide races?
Yes. The governor's race is the one exception where we're seeing some significant money being spent on the PAC level, even though, there's this discrepancy. So Jared Polis is a self-funding candidate. He's spent $7 million plus on his own campaign so far. His opponent, Republican Heidi Ganahl, University of Colorado Regent, has raised only about $1.5 million and had like a few $100,000 to start September. So she's really trailing behind. So what we have seen, though, is that there's this group where we talked about, think about him last week, Weld County rancher Steve Wells is pouring $6 million so far into a group to, help Heidi get elected and try and push back on the governor. And, that's a significant amount of money. We're not really seeing as much come in on the Democratic side. The difference, of course, though, is that Governor Polis can self-fund. And so he spent $23 million to win in 2018. So he's only spent a fraction of that so far. He's able to continue pouring money into his race as he sees fit. And frankly, the governor's race isn't seen as competitive as some of those down ballot races where Republican outside money just hasn't come in yet.
Right. Well, super interesting. And I know that you'll keep us up to date on this in the next few weeks. The other thing that I wanted to pivot to is the Colorado Democrats filing a lawsuit to stop the recall of State Senator Kevin Priola, I believe, who recently changed political affiliations. So can you fill us in on what's happening with that situation?
Sure. And the background here is that, Kevin Priola was a longtime Republican. Last month decided to switch his party affiliation to Democrats, citing, the Republican Party's embrace of conspiracy theories around the 2020 presidential election, and also what he said was the GOP's inaction on climate change. And so that really ruffled a lot of feathers. And so Republicans were pretty upset about it and decided they wanted to try and recall him. But the complicated thing that was going on here was that Kevin Priola currently represents Senate District 25, which is a toss-up district, maybe even leans a little bit blue. But because of redistricting last year, starting in January, on January 9th, he'll represent Senate District 13, which is a new district that stretches along US 85 from the Brighton area up into Greeley. And that's like really ruby red territory. So Priola is going from representing this toss-up district to what we call a Republican plus four district because it's supposedly 4 percentage points leans in Republicans' favor. So when the recall was filed, there was a big question about which district was it going to happen in, 25, which he represents now, or 13, this future district where his chances of being successful or coming out unscathed from the recall election are much lower. And the Secretary of State's office, Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, a Democrat, ruled that the recall should happen in Senate District 13, the one that's going to be tougher for Priola to survive the recall in. But Democrats were pretty upset about this, and they kind of had said, you know, we're going to weigh our legal options. We anticipated this coming. And then on Monday, they filed a lawsuit in Denver to try and stop the recall and at very least, you know, make it happen in Senate District 25, but just kind of halt the process. The interesting thing, though, is that, you know, last week, the Secretary of State's office let the recall move forward to start gathering signatures. So there's people out there gathering signatures right now to try and force a special recall election in Senate District 13. So a judge is going to have to rule pretty quickly on this. Money's being spent, you know, signatures are out there. There's people being paid to gather them to get this all cleared up. And then meanwhile, you got this all playing out amidst an election year, which is like already crazy. So it's like a bonfire on top of a bonfire with like gasoline being poured on it. And I'm just sitting here getting burned.
This sounds like it's going to be another one that between now and November that is going to keep you and the political team for the Colorado Sun just absolutely on your toes. You mentioned that a judge is going to have to rule probably pretty quickly on the Priola situation. At what level does that ruling get made? Is that in Adams County? Is that what level of decision making?
Sure. So the group that's defending Priola, which is called Colorado Over Party, basically filed this lawsuit in Denver against the Secretary of State's office. And it all gets kind of interesting here because you got Democrats suing the Democratic Secretary of State. It's not that unusual. These kind of things happen from time to time. It's not really like inter-party chaos, as I saw the head of the Republican Party say. And so, you know, a Denver district judge is going to rule on what's called a temporary restraining order or an injunction that the Democrats have asked for. That could be very quickly appealed and go to the appeals court or the state Supreme Court or federal court. So it could be a pretty wild legal ride that like hangs over this entire situation. And again, like I said, you know, money is being spent as we speak right now to gather signatures for this recall campaign. And so, you know, Republicans could potentially lose a lot of money if they continue to gather signatures. The judge rules at the end of the day that the recall has to happen instead of District 25 instead of 13. And again, we're not talking like chump change here. This is going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars.
All right. Well, keep us posted. And Jesse, thank you for talking to us today. And thanks to everybody who helped produce today's podcast and our production partners, Pirate Audio. Have a wonderful day out there. And I sincerely hope you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado water officials this week unanimously reversed a controversial 2020 decision and added new pollution protections for the South Platte River and Clear Creek through Metro Denver. The Colorado Water Quality Control Commission cited a campaign by environmental justice advocates who demanded a change. Now, permitted polluters, including Metro Water Recovery and Molson Coors, will have to prove any new actions won't further damage the Denver area streams. Aquatic life in those streams is already troubled by runoff, pollution discharge, and high temperatures. Rural towns in Colorado want to participate in the electrification revolution, but some have a problem. Their electrical grids aren't as robust for fast charging as higher traffic areas. Surveys say drivers want access to fast chargers that can give them up to 100 miles of range in 15 to 30 minutes of plugging in. That, they say, would alleviate range anxiety and make travelers feel completely comfortable switching to electric vehicles. A company called FreeWire has a charger up and running in Julesburg that offers some intriguing solutions. With the Colorado River overtaxed in the past 20 years, Grand Valley farmers in Colorado are facing urgent questions regarding the future of water in the river. Agriculture accounts for about 70% of the state's Colorado River water use. And now there are questions circulating about how farming can be more efficient, whether water can be conserved and banked in Lake Powell, and what, if anything, to do about so-called water speculators looking to make a buck from the state's most precious resource. Read more on the Colorado River crisis in a series of stories we're running all this week. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And The Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.